With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Hour 2, the second hour of The Food Show on WWL-FM. HD2, and remember, it's the highest quality audio known to mankind, and also streaming all over the world, wherever the internet is available, via the website of WWL, a great behemoth of a radio station located in downtown New Orleans with views of the Mississippi River. This is not the usual host, it's a fill-in host, but a proud fill-in. It's the gourmet cellist, it's Daniel Lalchuk, and we had an incredible time that really flew by the last hour talking with Dan Davis, the sommelier of Commander's Palace, who we call the wine guy, talking about wine and how to buy wine and everything like that. And please go back and listen to the podcast if you missed it. Now joining us is a very interesting guest, one we're honored to have. This is Arthur Schwartz, known the world over as the food maven. Mr. Arthur Schwartz, you're most welcome to The Food Show with the Gourmet Cellist.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.
And look, there's a lot to say about you. Dozens of cookbooks. You had a great radio show on WOR for, 12 years at least in New York City?
Yes. And, you know, I'm still on the radio on an NPR affiliate that broadcasts from Sharon, Connecticut. We've been called by the New York Times the quirkiest NPR affiliate in the country.
Yeah,
we're pretty quirky.
Yeah,
and one of the quirks is that you can actually watch our radio show on Facebook.
So it's a TV show as well. I actually discovered you because I was Googling brisket recipes about 2.5 years ago, and you know your brisket recipe is probably the most popular brisket recipe in the world, and I'm not exaggerating.
I've heard that. And by the way, it's also the simplest brisket recipe in the world.
Well, tell us how to do it now that we got onto the topic of it's so simple.
Well, I had a mother who liked to be experimental, and we went through many different brisket recipes through my childhood.
Yeah.
Until, like, I was a teenager. I mean, she did things like the Lipton onion soup brisket. There was a period where we had Harvey's Bristol cream, our brisket cooked in Harvey's Bristol cream.
Yeah.
But then she reverted back to the original, like my great-grandmother, which is nothing but onions. And if you want, you can add some sliced carrot.
So literally nothing but onions.
And literally all you do is stick it in the oven covered. Either in my mother's day, she had this covered roaster, which I somehow lost over the years. But, you know, in a roasting pan with aluminum foil. And it takes a good 3 hours for a brisket to get tender. But when it's just about tender, you uncover it. You take the meat out, you slice it, and then you put it. And then you're going to have a lot of juices that have resulted from the meat itself. And by the way, like if you have a 7-pound brisket, you want 3 pounds of sliced onions, a lot of onions.
Wow.
And salt and pepper, of course. I sometimes even put a couple of bay leaves in there. And at the end, you put the brisket back in the pan with all the juices and the onions. And it's even good to do this the day ahead because, you know, it's 3 hours in the oven. You don't always have time for the day of the meal to do that. But it's good the next day. And the next day you put it back in the oven, but this time uncovered, and cook it until it's now very tender. And the meat will brown, and you will have all these wonderful beefy onions to have sort of like a sauce on the meat. We always had this with kasha, with buckwheat groats. So the onions went on top of, and the juices, the meat juices, went on top of the buckwheat groats, with or without bow tie pasta in it. But
I see. That was a traditional way, right, with kasha, the bow tie pasta.
Yeah, kasha varnishkis, if it had the bow tie pasta mixed in with kasha. Anyway, that's maybe the most festive Jewish American dish On Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, everybody makes a brisket for a Passover. You're not supposed to have roasted meat on Passover, so this is braised meat, so it's often made for Passover. My mother would made it on my birthday.
Brisket birthday.
Big celebration. Yeah. There.
Now, look, I for everybody who's not familiar, probably most of the listeners, because it's a very seriously devoted food audience here in New Orleans, as you might imagine. So I imagine.
I imagine very much, yeah. So, I don't have to imagine. I've been to New Orleans. Mainly to eat.
Exactly. So most people probably know, but I just want to mention a few of your books while we're on the topic, because you mentioned something about the Jewish cooking. So I want to say, first of all, my favorite of all of your books is The Southern Italian Table, Authentic Tastes from Traditional Kitchens. And I use that
my
a lot.
That's a long story with that, but it's got beautiful pictures.
It has great pictures, and it has great, and even the cover, it has these I'm looking at the cover with these meatballs. But another one of your books that I think is wonderful is Soup Suppers. It's more than 100 main course soups. And for anybody who wants to know more about food in New York, it's Arthur Schwartz's New York City Food, an opinionated history of more than 100 food institutions. So,
With 100 legendary recipes, that's the whole. You know, there are so many recipes that originated in New York restaurants, hotels, and homes that later became national dishes. Eggs Benedict, there's one.
Oh, really?
What would brunch be without Eggs Benedict?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you have in New Orleans, you have tons of these yourself, of course. Oysters Rockefeller, everybody thinks that's a New York dish because it's named for Rockefeller, but in fact, it's a New Orleans oyster dish.
That's right. Actually, yeah, yesterday we just had people from Antoine's over. We had a waiter from Antoine's where the dish was invented who's been a waiter there for more than 50 years.
Good for him.
And he was talking all about, I think he started when he was 15 or something, he was talking about the original Oysters Rockefeller. But now I want to tell everybody that, first of all, Arthur Schwartz, also known as the food maven the world over, is an expert, I'd say particularly, and correct me if I'm describing you, an expert in both Jewish food and Southern Italian food, of all things. Would that be fair to say?
Not, for me, it's not of all things.
Okay.
Because I grew up in a neighborhood in New York where everybody, and I really mean just about everybody, was either Jewish, Italian, or Irish. So my neighbors were Italian. I grew up in a first 6 years of my life, I was in a house with two families, and the other family was Neapolitan. So I always like to say my first solid food could well have been spaghetti with ragu, or ziti with ragu, more likely. So to me, Southern Italian food, as interpreted by mostly Italian Americans, not necessarily off the boat Italians, is my soul food. It is, you know, besides kosher varnishkes, I need to have my spaghetti. So in the 1990s, I realized that this was a cuisine that got no respect, even though, as Rodney Dangerfield used to say, but it was well deserving of respect because, in fact, some of the most popular foods in the world come from Naples and surrounding areas, like spaghetti, like pizza, lasagna. I mean, they even eat pizza in China these days. So that's maybe the most dissimilated and is it dissimilated or and assimilated food in America. So in the 1990s, I've been going back and forth to Italy since I was in my early 20s, and I loved the south of Italy. In fact, more than the central and northern parts, because in the south, people are very warm and friendly, and they take you in. So I could become friends with people in the South. I could be invited home for lunch and dinner. I'd be introduced to their family. So I love that aspect. I'm a journalist by training and sort of by nature. It means I'm nosy. And so I liked poking into people's pots in their kitchens. So I went back to Naples and cooked with many, many, many people, and wrote a book called Naples at Table, which is, if I may boast a second, acknowledged as the definitive cookbook on Neapolitan cuisine, which is a cuisine. Because for a cuisine, as you all know in New Orleans, you need to have, it's not an aristocracy. Rich people, who, or at least people who can afford to patronize chefs and restaurants and appreciate the finer things. And in Naples, they had the royalty until 1861. The whole of south of Italy was run by a monarchy called the Borboni family. And they tied everything together. So I always like to say, there's no such thing, really, and this is not a joke, as northern Italian cuisine. But there is such a thing as southern Italian cuisine, because they were all bound together by the Borbonis. And, in fact, the same ingredients. Interestingly, I think, southern Italian food is based on New World ingredients. Peppers, tomatoes, potatoes, chocolate, vanilla, chilies, peppers of all kinds, were not introduced to Europe until the 1500s from the New World. And because of the poverty of the South and some other political and geographical climate reasons, the south of Italy became a place where all these things grew very well and were used by the people in their food. So anyway, Naples at Table is, I guess it's my favorite child. I shouldn't say that, but I do like the one you like, though, too. And also, Soup Suppers is my bestseller.
That is wonderful. Now, you know, Mr. Arthur Schwartz, we have very coincidentally a totally unexpected call from a very well-known Italian chef here in New Orleans. So I'm gonna merge the call briefly and see if he has anything interesting to say. Chef Andrea, who's from Capri, by the way.
Really?
Yes, and which you know very well. Is he here, Chef Andrea?
Hi.
How are you? Is everybody
Ciao, Andrea.
Here?
Ciao. Ciao. Buongiorno. Buonasera. Buon pomeriggio.
Whatever.
That's wonderful.
That's good afternoon, but nobody says that in Italian.
Absolutely. No, it's true.
So what's going on?
Wonderful historical history that you have. Very interested for the listener to listen to this wonderful, of course, great voice you have, but also interesting history about the cuisine of Naples, the La Campania region, which is a wonderful, wonderful cuisine in the south for many, many centuries, of course, like you mentioned, and you know so much about it. I was very fascinated to listen to you. But, you know, I think the most important thing to... I grew up in Italy. I grew up in Capri, yeah, Capri. I graduated from Naples, hotel schools in Naples, graduated. And then I left Italy. I went to Switzerland, France, Germany, and around the world.
And you ended up in America's food capital.
Mamma mia. What a bit. All my dream come true. I say a lot of time, God bless America. All my dream came true here in New Orleans in the United States. I was for 2 years in Atlanta, and then I moved to New Orleans in 1977.
Do you have a restaurant in New Orleans?
Yes, Andrea's restaurant.
It's Andrea, okay.
Yeah, it's Italian restaurant.
And do you serve Caprese food?
I serve a little bit everything, and what we have.
Torta
nice
caprese,
the
two most famous dishes from Capri.
La mozzarella caprese.
Is torta caprese, which is a flourless, it's the original flourless chocolate cake.
Oh, is that true?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's only eggs and almonds and chocolate. No flour.
No flour.
And the other one, of course, is insalata caprese.
Made today some. Water buffalo milk mozzarella. Just made it. Nice and wonderful. Matter of fact, I just had a half of the buffalo milk mozzarella just by himself.
Where do you get the buffalo mozzarella from?
We usually import the curd from the Italy.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, and I make it myself here.
Oh, okay.
And today I made another one.
I used to have a cooking school in Pestum. South of Salerno, which I could see Capri from my kitchen.
I've been there. Yeah,
in Pestum. And I'm on a water buffalo farm. My friend Baronessa Cecilia Bellelli and her two sons have the largest water buffalo farm in the south of Italy.
Yes.
And so, of course, I eat mozzarella every day.
Yeah, it's a wonderful cuisine, as you know, light, especially with a lot of bountiful seafood. And bountiful, a lot of other things we do, very rich soil, volcanic soil, as you know, the tomato are wonderful. And we do the tomato, the large tomato is like, you know, just so flavorful here in Louisiana. We have Creole tomato, but it's similar to that. But the flavor is so distinguished, different, because the soil. And as you know,
yes, of course.
It's so wonderful. We make some great wine. I have a winery also too in my little house in Italy. I got 4 acres of land, and we make Aglianico and Falanghina. So I was very lucky enough to make my own wine and import here in America. So
and next time I'm in New Orleans, I'm going to have to go to Andrea's.
We'd love to have you. Please let us know. We'll pick you up and bring it back. We have free service limousine most of the time if you stay downtown or wherever you stay. If you call us, we're going to pick you up a complimentary, bring it back. The service is a wonderful limousine and very accommodating. And we do a lot for a lot of people from across the lake, you know, rather from the other side of the lake. It's 24 miles. We pick up our guests and so on. But it really is a wonderful, great opportunity to talk to you because you know so much about cooking and cuisine. And
well, I'm in love
with your
native cuisine.
That's what you say now.
It's a cuisine, by the way, that really speaks to Americans these days because it's very healthy cuisine. I don't know if I would use the word light necessarily, but it is healthful because it's based on vegetables.
Yeah, extra virgin olive oil
and fish and cheese and eggs. Not much meat.
Yeah.
Extra virgin olive oil.
All right.
And in fact, it was an American who lived in a little town on the Bay of Salerno.
Yeah.
Who observed that people were living to over 100 here, and he called it the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm having a moment here, not remembering his name, but it will come to me. He's the same man who invented K rations for the military.
Uh-huh.
And after the war, when he moved to Pichota, he wrote about this, and we now know, of course, that this is the most healthful way of eating in the world. And witness my friend Cecilia Bellelli. Her aunts and her mother and her aunts all died very, very vigorous women until the very end, and they all died in their late 90s.
Uh-huh.
So I always remember Tia Laura, that's Aunt Laura's 90th birthday party. She was one of the younger sisters. And her another sister who was Delia, who was about to turn 99, not only wore high heels to the 90th birthday party, but crossed her legs when we took the sister photo.
Mamma mia
is right.
Now, gentlemen,
and they're all beautiful women too.
I must interject very briefly because the producer here through the glasses is turning the screws on me big time to come to this break. So now, Arthur Schwartz, please hang on and. If you don't mind, you know how commercial radio is.
I don't mind, but I hear my phone may be dying.
Okay, well.
So we don't have that much time. But we were going to talk about some holiday traditions.
Yes, but I must
fine.
Go quickly, but stay on, will you? And Chef Andrea.
I'm a radio guy, I understand.
Stay on, please. And Chef Andrea.
You want me to call back in the other half hour?
In case we can't, say a quick word now about Andrea's because it is one of my favorite restaurants in all of New Orleans. And tell us about the fresh fish you have. You have great fish.
We have some great, great, beautiful speckled trout. I love that. Well, local speckled trout, of course. My fish comes here whole. I check the eyes and I check the gills, and we fillet our fish when you order. But also, you can have the whole fish cooked and deboned to your table. The speckled trout is one of my favorite. The other favorite fish I have is the American red snapper. It's we call it pesce rosso, which is la trilla in Mediterranean. It's a little, this one is in America, it's a little larger than the Mediterranean trilla. La trilla is one of my favorite fish. We call it American red snapper. We do crazy water. Acqua pazza, just like in Naples area, bait in Naples. Then the other one is a flounder, beautiful flounder. Salmon, yellowfin tuna, wonderful chopino, mussels and clams. I love chopino. The classical we call here in New Orleans, the bouillabaisse, which is wonderful. You can have that too today. And but also today I introduce something that every year we do at Andrea, River Your Menu. Buon Natale, the whole month of the December, we have wonderful dishes like, I give an example, homemade fresh porcini mushroom ravioli. That's a mamma mia. The other one is a beautiful arborio rice imported from Piemonte. And we do arborio rice with the quattro formaggi. That's a wonderful, great dish. If you remember, you had that the other night with homemade fresh rigatoni when you were your friend here. On the entree side, we have the veal chop alla griglia. We have some beautiful roast duckling, really great one, my favorite. And the veal chop is my favorite. And, of course, much more. And you have the wine accompaniment if you like the wine that we can serve the wine with it. So the whole four-course meal goes for $49.50. We have the whole entire month of December to celebrate. We have a lot of amply free parking, but a lot of rooms for a party special this time of the year for Christmas holiday season. We'd love to have you.
Great. And give us
my
the address home, and the phone number, Andrea, because we're...
My home is your home.
Exactly.
Andrea, 834-8583. Ciao, amici. Arrivederci a tutti. Ciao. 834-8583. Andrea.
There
ciao. My home is your home.
There
ciao.
He goes. Chef Andrea is gone. And Mr. Arthur Schwartz, we've retooled things a little bit so we don't have to go to break immediately. So we can keep grilling you.
Okay.
We want to keep grilling you before you lose power on your phone. So.
Okay, I'm just fine. I just hope the phone holds out.
Well, we do too. So, okay. So we talked a little about brisket and a little
about brisket.
Historical. But look, let's say that you have people who are at a loss as to what the hell are they going to do for the holidays, and they don't want to do the same thing exactly. Maybe, in fact, you know, here we have a huge Italian population, mainly from Sicily and southern Italy, descendants.
Right.
So what do we do if we don't want to make exactly how great-great-great-grandmother from, you know, 200 years ago did the whatever? Give us some ideas for maybe something really exciting from some southern Italian holiday type.
Really
food.
Exciting. I try to stay away from that word. You're going to be disappointed if I tell you the truth. I'll tell you something really pretty.
Yeah.
And traditional that I'm trying to bring back because I don't think a lot of people remember. Insalata di rinforzo. Insalata, by the way, your Italian pronunciation is beautiful, Daniel.
Well, I lived in Rome in high school, so I was well
there
trained.
There we go. Yeah. And also you're a musician, so
that's true.
That explains a lot.
I try to listen, yeah, listen well.
Anyway, insalata di rinforzo is a triple pun. The name is a triple pun because rinforzo means reinforced. But in this case, it could mean... this salad is served no matter what. It's an additional dish. It reinforces the table. Or it holds up for days and can be supplemented. So that's rinforzo. Also, in the figurative way, rinforzo means pick-me-up. So it's a pick-me-up salad. But what it is picked vegetables and fresh cauliflower and anchovies arranged in such a colorful and beautiful way that it could stand in for decoration on the buffet or on the Christmas table. So you boil up a head of cauliflower. And by the way, people are surprised to hear that cauliflower is an extremely popular vegetable in the south of Italy. And in Sicily, they're wild for cauliflower, and they make cauliflower in many different ways.
What's your favorite one or two ways to prepare cauliflower, now that you mentioned it?
Oh, well, my favorite is the way my grandmother, who was Hungarian, did it, which was to boil the cauliflower and then fry it with breadcrumbs and butter. But I also do is actually this is a recipe that I ate in Sicily and learned how to make. I was on a buffet on an antipasto buffet. You take cauliflower at but when they're tender, toss the cauliflower pieces in egg that you've beaten with salt, pepper, and some parmigiano. And then you fry that. I usually do this in olive oil. And you fry that until the egg coat. And there'll be, you know, for a whole head of cauliflower, you need like three eggs. And there'll be a little extra, and you pour that over. And when the egg coating with the cheese in it gets a little bit brown, it's done. And it's so, and then you sprinkle it with salt and serve it. It could be a vegetable, but it's a rich thing, so you can serve it as a first course with other vegetable first courses. As I was saying, Southern Italian cuisine is based on vegetables, so you may start a meal and even with your main course have several vegetables. It's a fallacy that Italians just sit down to a big bowl of pasta or pasta and meat, which is rare actually to add meat. They eat pasta. I mean, I'm on a sort of diet lately, so I'm not eating it every day, but I do eat pasta a lot of days of the week. But I eat small amounts. I eat 2 or 3 ounces. Not 6 ounces like an American bowl of pasta.
But it's very difficult. I have to say, it's very emotionally difficult to stop eating pasta when it's wonderful. I mean, I
agree with you, but if you only made, we had spaghetti for lunch today, and we're two here, and I made 6 ounces of pasta. Let me just say that 3 ounces of spaghetti or even any kind of macaroni will fill a pasta bowl over the brim. And if you add, depending on how much vegetable or other stuff you are eating it with, not just sauce, it could be more than a bowl full. So, and if you've only made 3 ounces, Daniel, you can't eat anymore.
So
today we had it with a tomato sauce. I call it marinara. Marinara is not plain tomato sauce to me. In Naples, marinara always has some kind of seafood content in it. In my case today, it was capers and tuna fish. So we had this very nice tomato sauce with garlic, oregano, tuna, and so that's substantial. And 3 ounces of spaghetti was more than enough. I'm not hungry yet, and I ate at 1 o'clock.
I see. So your trick is to simply make less, because I find it very difficult.
Yeah,
it's difficult to eat less.
If you cook up a pound, I'm probably going to eat a pound.
That's what happens to me weekly, I'd say.
All right, but how's your waistline? Mine is... Mine's a little large.
So. Well, I don't like to talk about myself, so I'll just leave it at that. But I'll try to limit the pasta intake. But look, so there's a great idea. The insalata.
Insalata di rinforzo. Now I add to this beautiful fresh cauliflower. I buy in the supermarket, and I know that you. Well, you have another name for this, giardiniera, but there's another name for it in New Orleans. You have a local name for these mixed pickled vegetables.
The name is slipping my mind now. But actually, I have heard giardiniera here as well at some restaurants. Maybe he's gone. Well, I think he's gone. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from New York, is temporarily gone, and we hope he'll return. But he's for the time being, no longer with us. Reminding everybody, this is a... Daniel Lalchuk, the gourmet cellist, sitting in for Tom Fitzmaurice. It's been a very eventful show. It's actually been one of the most eventful shows that anybody can remember in recent history, the food show. And to keep it being eventful, I implore you to pick up your telephone and dial the following digits, 504-260-6368. It's 504-260-6368. And we'd love to have you call in and talk about anything at all having to do with food and going out and dining in and recipes and cookbooks and food memories and food wishes. Also reminding everybody, by the way, that the Eat Club, which is a brainchild of Tom Fitzmaurice, who is usually in the seat, is going to New York, going to Carnegie Hall, to hear the performance at Carnegie Hall by the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. And the Eat Club has designed an incredible itinerary, all built in to one price. And the whole point is you buy a package deal and you're able to get the following 4 items. Round trip airfare in New Orleans, New York. Round trip transfers from airport to hotel. 4 nights at the Viceroy Hotel, which is brand new. Marianne discovered it. Marianne Fitzmaurice's wife, Tom. Steps from Carnegie Hall. And tickets to the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra performance at Carnegie Hall, Tuesday, February 27, 2018, in the Parquet Left, which is a darn good seat, if you ask me. So call us and talk to us about anything at all having to do with the holidays or not the holidays and what you're doing with your family or your friends or neither, what you're doing with yourself. I happen to do a lot of cooking for myself, and it's wonderful. There's this mentality sometimes with some friends of mine or some people I know that they don't want to cook really great things for themselves. And I say bologna. Not that I want you to cook bologna. Quite the contrary, because we don't like bologna on this show. Mortadella is something we can do, but not bologna, maybe a little less so. And it looks like the radio gods or whatever have smiled upon us, and we're able to regain contact all the way to New York City with Mr. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Welcome
back.
I'm
here. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, welcome back.
I knew my phone was going to die any second, but Now I'm on a different phone as well, charged.
Good, and I'll just remind everybody who's listening, by the way, that while we're on with Arthur Schwartz, who's a truly eminent authority of food, you are able to call and ask him a question or give him a comment. So please don't let the fact that we are talking with a special guest via the telephone dissuade you from using your own telephone to dial 504-260-6368. And in fact, we have a call coming in, probably a question for you, Doctor. It's Dr. Schwartz. I believe they call you that on Robin Hood Radio, yeah?
By the way.
So we have Chris calling.
How about Don Arturo?
Don Arturo. It's great. So a question.
There's some young men in my life who grew up calling me that. They still do.
Don Arturo. Okay. So we're going to hear now from Chris, who's going to ask Don Arturo a question. And Chris, you're merged onto the food show with the Gourmet Cellist and the Food Maven.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good on my way, fighting this traffic to the house to prepare a ribeye. And I've called Tom on multiple occasions, talking and asking him for advice on how to do a proper ribeye. I think I cook a pretty good ribeye based on what I typically do, but I'm always looking to try to change it and maybe tweak it this way, tweak it that way to try to get maybe a different flavor. Even on like kind of an Italian-based flavor. I used a lot of garlic, but that's kind of given for any kind of steak. But I was wondering if any of you guys have any kind of twist that you guys do that I might be able to implement and see if I can pull that off tonight.
Arthur Schwartz, can you help our gentleman?
Well, I have to say that I love the flavor of a really good piece of meat. So
right.
Are we talking about a rib steak or rib roast? Rib steak, I think you're saying.
Ribeye steak, about an inch and a half.
A steak,
typically.
Okay.
I do it inside and outside. So, I mean, I can do it on the grill or on the oven or pan.
Well,
here, or
I think, to me, salt is about all you need to make a great ribeye steak on the grill. But given, saying that, if it's a less than great steak, and most of them are, how about a pizzaiola? Do you ever do it pizzaiola style? Now, in the old days, pizzaiola was usually made with some kind of a cut of meat that needed to be cooked, braised, because it browned and then cooked in a liquid to make it tender.
Okay.
However, there's no reason you can't make a pizzaiola with a really good steak, in which case you just... I don't have the opportunity to have the grill outside. I live in an apartment in Brooklyn. but what I do when I'm making a steak is I make sure that it's very thick, at least an inch and a half.
Right.
And I sear it on both sides, 3 minutes per side on the highest possible heat in a black iron skillet that I have preheated for a nice long time. So the second the steak hits the pan, it really starts cooking. And then after 3 minutes on each side, it's usually well browned. I may take another minute because it's very thick. I may take another minute to brown the sides. I hold it
with tongs.
Thank you. And I hold it with tongs and I brown the sides. Then I put it in a 450 degree oven. Usually for about an inch and a half thick, it takes me about. I have another idea for you, too. It just came to me. For about another 8 minutes. And then you take the steak out, let it sit and rest. And while it's resting, you can make a sauce in the pan that you cooked it in. Pour off the fat that's in the pan because it will have rendered quite a bit of fat. And in the pat, if you want to make it pizzaiola style, all you do is add some chopped up canned tomatoes, not fresh tomatoes. You want the flavor of a good Italian San Marzano tomato here. And I never buy already chopped tomatoes. I buy whole field tomatoes. And I chop them up in the pan. I add garlic, chopped garlic, and a nice amount of oregano. And you let that sauce simmer for, not more than 5 or 6 minutes is all it takes. And then you put the steak back in and just turn it a couple of times in the sauce. But here's a sauce that I've been making lately for mediocre meat. As I said, if it's great meat, I don't want to season it except with salt and pepper when I eat it. But after the steak has finished cooking, pour off the fat,
Okay.
At least one and not two cloves of chopped garlic, and just toss that around in the hot pan for literally a minute, and then add about 3/4 of, this is for one big steak, about 3/4 of a cup of red wine, of good hearty red wine that you might want to drink with the steak.
Okay.
And
okay.
about a quarter of a cup of dry marsala, and let that cook for just a few minutes. It'll cook down and get a little bit syrupy. Before it actually gets syrupy, add a tablespoon of tomato paste that you've diluted and mashed up into a couple tablespoons of water. And that's it. That's your little pan sauce. Red wine, marsala, garlic, fennel. Oh, I forgot the hot pepper.
Oh, okay. And
peperoncino, yes. Red wine, marsala, garlic, fennel, hot pepper, and a little bit of tomato paste will do all the thickening that you need. And that's it. You pour that over your steak, it's divine.
And the beautiful violin and the guitar tunes that lead us right back into the food show. It's the gourmet cellist here, Dan Lelchuk, on with the food maven, Mr. Arthur Schwartz, calling via telephone from Brooklyn. Welcome back to you, sir. And is he still there? Thank you. He is.
Happy to be here.
We have a call for you coming in from Dave. And it says on the screen, I know who Dave is, actually. He's known as the gourmet bassist, principal double bass in the Philharmonic here in New Orleans. And I bet he has a question for you. Dave, you there?
Hello. Hey, it's a joy to hear.
Hey. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. Damn, you're always doing a great job there. And I'm intrigued. Arthur, your show on NPR, is it also a podcast in case you don't hear it live?
I'm having trouble hearing, Daniel.
He said he's asking, and the answer is yes. He said, is your NPR show also podcasted? And absolutely.
Yes, it is. It is. It's robinhoodradio.com. You can listen to me endlessly because it's archived for months. We're in the woods in Sharon, Connecticut, which is the northwest corner of Connecticut.
Oh,
and
sure.
And so hence we are Robin Hood Radio.
Okay, I will find it. I would love to. And since I have a chance to ask you, what is your favorite fin fish recipe? What is your favorite fin seafood recipe?
Fin fish.
Yeah.
Oh, fin fish.
Yeah.
There's a Neapolitan fin fish dish called acqua pazza, which means crazy water. And you make your crazy water by boiling some parsley, hot pepper, garlic, and if you want, you can add a tomato product, like maybe some cherry tomatoes, but you're not making tomato sauce. Anyway, you simmer the, and salt and pepper, you simmer, well, not pepper, because you're using red pepper and hot pepper.
Right.
You simmer those together for a few minutes, and then you add your fin fish and basically poach the fish in the crazy water. And you eat this, by the way, in a bowl so that you can dunk into the crazy water, which is now flavored with the fish. It's delicious.
Oh, cool.
And super simple. Super, super simple. I would say that usually this is made with the small whole fish, which of course gives it the most flavor. But you can also use a fillet. Just be careful not to boil it so that the fish falls apart.
Right. Just keep it at a light poach.
Yeah. Keep it at a low.
I'm intrigued.
This brings me, because Daniel wanted to talk about holiday tradition. This brings me to the myth of the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Italian Americans always talk about Christmas Eve dinner as being the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Well, nobody in Italy that I have talked to, and I talk to everybody I meet about this, has ever heard of a number being attached to the number of fish dishes that you have on Christmas Eve. The fact is, Christmas Eve is a fast day, and you're not supposed to eat meat until after midnight mass. So the meal that you have with your family before going to church is largely fish. Of course, if you're vegetarian, you got it easy. You don't even need the fish. But there's no number attached, and they just eat as many as the family likes to eat. They usually have each family has its own traditions of which fish dishes. It mostly does include spaghetti with clam sauce, one way or another.
Oh.
And there's bacala is very popular, salt cod.
Oh, yeah.
And in Italy, you can buy the salt cod already soaked, so you just take it home.
Oh, really?
You don't have to soak it. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. In New Orleans, I don't know what quality of salt cod you get, but around here...
Oh, you can find it. You can find it. It's funny. My both sides of my family are from New England, so we have a lot of interesting old salt cod recipes go way back. I'm still digging through old recipes and things like that. I love
salt cod. Baked with potatoes and olives and a little tomato in the oven.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It just happens that today, I was on Ciao Italia years ago with Mary Esposito. Marianne Esposito. And I demonstrated on her program. I posted it on Facebook today. Because the video just came up as one of those Facebook memories. I said, what the hell? And so it just happens that my little demo of this dish is on Facebook as we speak.
Oh, cool.
It's one of my favorite things, I got to say.
So for everybody who's listening, by the way, that's Arthur Schwartz on Facebook. So go to his Facebook page and go watch that video.
Go to my Facebook page. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I got confused.
Watch the video. We have to go to a break. Much shorter break. But Dave, I hope you come back and listen to the podcast. And I, by the way,
thank you, Dave.
Yeah, and I listen to Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from Robin Hood Radio, religiously weekly. In fact, when I discovered him, there was such a backlog. I don't think I listened to anything else for weeks and weeks to just catch up with everything. But
if you have insomnia, you can turn it on.
Exactly. And before we go to a break, Arthur Schwartz, please hang on. The Gourmet Cellist here. WWL HD Radio. We're on with Arthur Schwartz calling from Brooklyn, and he's been so nice to stay on the phone with us. Arthur Schwartz is known world over as the food maven. Many cookbooks to his name. Was a restaurant critic for the New York Daily News for a long time, and had a wonderful show on WOR, which is a big talk radio station in New York City, for more than 12 years, and now appears weekly on Robin Hood Radio, an NPR affiliate based in Connecticut. How's that for a biography?
That's wonderful. Very succinct.
That was succinct.
Terrific.
Yeah, I don't think I left anything out. Okay.
Not really. Well, most of my life, but it's okay.
Okay. Now, we just have about 2.5 more minutes, so give us some inspiration. We've already had great ideas for ribeye. We've had great ideas for...
I thought that was inspiring, yes.
It was.
Especially the sauce with red wine and marsala, which I'm stuck on. I was thinking about this today because I knew you asked the question early. And the thing that I keep coming back to is a very, very simple dish that I make a lot during the winter, and especially around New Year's, because it's a lentil thing. And lentils are, superstitiously meant to signify good luck in the new year. On New Year's Day, Italians, north and south, all of them, usually eat some kind of lentils, often made with a sausage called cotechino, which is a sausage made with a lot of pork skin, and so it's very gelatinous. It has to be boiled a long time. But I make something that only takes a half an hour of lentils, and it's just called lentils and pasta. And I make it many different ways, but this is the most simple way. And really, when you're feeling poor, it's a cheap, cheap dish to make. When you're feeling that you need something healthy because you indulge too much, which we do in the holiday season, it's the perfect antidote to a day of indulgence. And also, it brings good luck in the new year. So you take, three-quarters of a cup of lentils. Now, I don't use the American lentils grown in Michigan, which are large, disintegrate after they're cooked.
We have 1 minute. Arthur, just letting you know, we have 1 minute. Yeah.
Tiny lentils. You boil them until they're almost tender, and then you throw into the pot a couple of glugs of olive oil, some hot pepper, parsley, chopped garlic, some tomato product, could be tomato paste, a little leftover tomato sauce, and you cook that for another 5 or 10 minutes, and then you add your pasta. I use Pasta Mista, a bag that contains many different shapes, well, several different shapes of pasta, and you put, or you can use, I like vermicelli too, very, very thin spaghetti, broken up, and you cook that in the lentils, adding a little water if you want it thinner, letting it cook down a little bit. You're not going to want it thicker, so you might want it a little thinner. That's it. And you eat that with hot pepper.
It's brilliant. And everybody, if you want to hear this again, which I certainly do, and I probably will soon, all you
call
do is...
Call me again, Daniel.
Yeah, we absolutely will. When I'm back on the show, which I hope is soon, I absolutely will call you. This has been a real treat, and thank you so much for having joined us today. And there he goes. That was Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Find out more about him at thefoodmaven.com. Arthur Schwartz. This is Daniel Lelchuk, the gourmet cellist, wishing you well. Talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.